Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, we finally have a game to talk about. Imagine that. And it's a game with three safeties, nonetheless. I don't think I've ever covered a game in my time that had two safeties, let alone three.
No, yeah, and going around the locker room and just asking random people that question, no one could even think of more than one in which they'd been a part of. But yeah, there were plenty of things to talk about, Mike. That was the fun thing about this game is that, you got a little bit of everything in all four quarters, all the way through.
Yeah.
You talk about the safeties, you talk about Joe Callahan's two-minute drive at the end of the first half, Justin Perillo's, coming out of nowhere, again, catching everything that's thrown his way, Micah Hyde with the interception. There's a lot of different things I think you could take as positives for the Packers in this first performance.
Yeah, well, if we focus on the offense starting out, you mentioned Justin Perillo. I thought there was some real progress, you might say, or the jump start of the battle for the number three tight end position. Perillo had a really strong game. As we've talked about, he seems to catch everything that's thrown his way all the time. Kennard Backman also flashed a little bit, made a really big play in the red zone there in that two-minute drive to get the Packers in position to score. What's your take right now on where that number three tight end position is?
Yeah, if I'm Mike McCarthy, I'm satisfied with what I saw from that competition in this game. Starting off with Justin Perillo, the thing that was most impressive about him, we know that he catches everything. We've seen that in practice, and that's what's really got him in this race. But he looks a lot more well-rounded as an overall tight end. His ability to not only gain separation like he did a couple times in the middle of the field, I mean, he had some wide-open grabs, but also, the times in which there is one to be caught in coverage, where they're contested. He can do both, and he's working to improve himself as a blocker, and you definitely see the signs of progress there that you want to see if you're the Packers. But even Kenny Backman then, too, coming back this year, he didn't have a catch his rookie season.
Right.
Being able to come out and really establish himself in that first game I thought was really important, a really good check, and to be able to avoid the blitz from Callahan, getting Backman in the middle of the field, and then Backman using his athleticism to stretch it out to an 18-yard gain. Very impressive by both Kennard and also Justin Perillo.
Yeah, I would say, and another number three spot, obviously, quarterback, Joe Callahan, Marquise Williams, they split first half and second half. And as we've talked about, we don't know if that number three quarterback is going to be on the active roster or on the practice squad, but I think Joe Callahan really stepped forward and took the lead in that battle, still a long way to go, but took the lead in that battle with that two-minute drive. We've seen it. The Packers practice the two-minute drill pretty much every day in practice. I don't know if there's a day that goes by that they don't have some sort of work in the two-minute drill, and Callahan really looked pretty smooth and sharp out there.
Absolutely, and Mama and Papa Callahan were in attendance for this one. They were also in Canton.
Yeah, I would say in Canton as well. They were waiting.
They drove 6 hours from New Jersey to be there to watch him in Canton. The game doesn't get played, so they flew in for this game just to, make sure you save on time, and got to see their son, I thought, play and really show himself very well. And yeah, it was also with the two-minute series and how he was able to command the offense. Talking to a lot of guys in the locker room, John Crockett, Don Barkley, they all talked about how much he was in control there. For being a rookie, the stage wasn't too big for him. Now,
yep,
there's certain things that he's going to have to work on and going to have to, as a rookie coming in, making that jump from the Division III level. But overall, considering you didn't have Brett Hundley available, Aaron Rodgers wasn't playing in the game, that was as good of a showing as I think you could have expected out of a rookie quarterback coming in with the weight of that offense on him in that first game.
Yeah, and let's talk about the way the game started as well. I think Mike McCarthy sending a message, so to speak,
yeah,
comes right out of the gate, feeds the ball to Eddie Lacy on four straight carries, picks up 24 yards, the biggest one on an 11-yard run up the middle on third down where he broke a tackle, put on the spin move, the whole thing. And Lacy said earlier this week in the locker room, he feels more explosive this year than last year. And that has to be music to the ears of Packers fans and the Packers coaches, for that matter.
It was just one game, one series, but that was my impression, too, watching him out there. And just the way he was hitting holes, it just seemed like there was more burst there than maybe there was at points last season. But as you said, Mike McCarthy talked about it with us. Edgar Bennett, the offensive coordinator, also mentioned that was a point of emphasis going into this game. They wanted to establish the run with both him and James Starks because they feel like that isn't something just to prepare them now. They feel like that's something they need to do better in this season that they didn't do last year. So to be able to set that tone right off the start and be able to get Lacy out of the gates like they did, I think that's something that's really positive for this offense, and definitely that running game looking to turn it around in 2016.
Yeah, and I think that work was important for the offensive line, because that opening series was when the starting offensive line was in there with J.C. Treader in at center for Corey Linsley, who is still out and on the PUP list. But they came out determined to run the football, and the drive ended up not resulting in points, but a lot of running attempts, a lot of production. And, you know, one of those things that if it's Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, you know, then when you get into a key third down, you're counting on your quarterback to convert that and keep it going. But I think Mike McCarthy was sending a message about how he want the mentality that he wants from his offensive line this year.
Really good work for, you know, you had Jared Cook coming back off the injury first time. He was in the offense. I think he got two series. He had the starting offensive line out there. Guys that are going to contribute at receiver, but overall, that middle of the field, even though you didn't have Aaron Rodgers, for them to start to get that rhythm and timing down, that's critical this time of year. And when you look back, that's something the Packers haven't always been able to do right off the bat. So it was positive, and I'm guessing that's something now as they go into these next few games when you're not sure how much Eddie Lacy's going to play. That's going to be something they can go back on now as they try to catapult themselves into the season.
Yeah, for sure. Well, plenty more to talk about on the defensive side of the ball after the break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball from the Browns game, the first thing that jumps out is, no pun intended, that diving interception by Micah Hyde at the goal line on the pass by RG3. And boy, you talk about a guy who maybe is kind of forgotten a little bit when we talk about the versatility in the secondary and all of these guys that can be playmakers for the Packers in the back end. Micah Hyde is right in that mix and a valuable part of this defense, isn't he?
There was last year, I remember talking to one NFL personnel executive that said Micah Hyde is the most important person in the Packers defense that nobody ever talks about. And Joe Witt, the cornerbacks coach, Darren Perry, the safeties coach, when they addressed the media earlier this week, they both echoed those comments. Joe called him a rare guy in that he could play both safety spots, he could play all four cornerback positions, and he does it without any attitude, without any gripes. He goes wherever they need him to go. They got Ha-Ha Clinton Dix at the safety, so then he moves back down into the slot. There's so many different ways that you can use Micah Hyde, and it's increasingly valuable because he also matches up pretty well with tight ends. That's a tough matchup for cornerbacks.
Yeah, for sure.
I know a lot of times last year people were talking about, he got beat by this guy, that guy. It's not easy for a cornerback to hold down those duties, and he tackles incredibly well. He's a guy that they have full confidence in, and as Joe Witt said, when they look at their top 11 players, Micah Hyde is in that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons they're trying to find ways to get him on the field.
Yeah, and then he'll drop back and return a punt, return a kickoff. Yeah. He's kind of, you know, a little bit of everything. Another thing we saw in the game, kind of an array of sacks from different guys on defense: Christian Ringo, Kyler Fackrell,
Reggie Gilbert
with chasing Cody Kessler out the back of the end zone there. Now it's just one sack, you know, kind of flashing the ability that the Packers are hoping that these players have. So what do you make of what you saw from the pass rush in the first game?
For me, the most important sack was Dayton Jones. He had the one coming off the edge early in the game, and he was kind of a heat-seeking missile a little bit, Spoff. I mean, he was getting close and close and close, and then finally he was able to get one down. I think that's really important for him. And you know, Winston Moss, the linebacker's coach who he's working with now this season as he transitions to that outside linebacker elephant role, he said it too. He looks more like an outside linebacker now. It isn't an elephant or a defensive lineman playing an outside backer spot. He looks like a guy that's natural at the position, and that's what an entire offseason will give you. Everybody knows what Dayton Jones can do, and I think they know what he brings to the table, and this is going to be the best way to utilize him when they can still get him inside and dime situations. But then you look at the young guys too. Kyler Fackrell, that's an important sack for him.
Yep.
And there was a little bit of a breakdown there in the pass protection, but still to be able to capitalize on that, you have to make the plays when they're available to you. He's, you know, we talked about, you know, the quiet sort of start he's off to, that more of maybe a long-term plan for him. But to come out of the gates and get that, I thought was good. And Christian Ringo, too, the sixth-round pick a year ago, he said he didn't expect it to take this long in his own mind.
Right.
And finally was able to get his first sack, which ended up going for a safety. So, yeah, that was big, I think, for all these young guys, being able to get those sort of confidence boosts up a little bit going into the second preseason game now.
Yeah, and I think what you said about Dayton Jones is really interesting, because – he did shed some weight. He's smaller. Yeah. It may make him more vulnerable against the run at times if he's put in certain situations. But I see the Packers being able to use him as a niche pass rusher, a situational guy that, you know, depending on how you want to shuffle around the rest of the defensive front, you can bring in Dayton Jones, a guy with fresh legs, a guy with explosion in a key situation. And as you say, even if he doesn't necessarily get the sack, it's getting there, it's putting the pressure on, it's hurrying the quarterback, all those things. And I think that's a role that Dayton Jones could really thrive in 2016.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not like the Packers are often asking these guys to drop into coverage that much. Occasionally there's some fire zone concepts, you see it with Julius Peppers, but for most cases, these guys are just going after the quarterback. And in terms of these Julius Peppers types and Dayton Jones, and that's, I think, what's really going to help him, is he can do what he does best in those situations. And he's improving in terms of setting an edge as an outside linebacker, because you still have a 275, 280-pound guy that's working on the outside against a more natural nose tackle type situation. So,
right.
I think for Jones, this is exactly what the Packers needed to do, because he was really stuck just because of the depth on the offensive line in that inside dime defensive line role. Well, he could still do that in his current situation when they get into those NASCAR concepts, but now in those first and second down situations, this is a way to get him on the field.
Yeah, and quickly with regards to special teams, I think we saw the Green Bay native and rookie Peter Mortel,
right,
announce himself, so to speak, as a legitimate contender for this punting job. We've talked about how Tim Mastay will be difficult to unseat as a seven-year veteran, but Mortel had a couple of really nice kicks, a big booming one, and then also a coffin corner type of kick that pinned the Browns deep and led to a safety. Now, neither punter followed up solid outings in the game on Friday night in practice on Monday. The punting period was pretty ugly in practice on Monday, but I think this competition is going to carry out through the rest of the month before it's decided.
I agree. Getting back to that game on Friday, though, it was a night for Wisconsin. You had Jared Aberderis filling in really well with the returns. He had that really nice shake and bake return.
Yeah, that one at the very end there.
Ron Zook, a special teams coordinator, said, I'm not even sure if we blocked anybody there. He just did his own thing and got out a 34-yard return.
Yeah.
From the other side of it, though, as you said, Mortel, 62-yard punt, I thought was critical for him establishing his confidence. But the bread and butter for him is going to be the directional punting. It's going to be pinning offenses back, excuse me, and being able to get that one down at the 4-yard line, I thought was really important for him. As you said, with practice, didn't exactly follow up on that the way you want to.
Right.
It's a long competition, though, and as Ron Zook said, they're going to occasionally have those days, but it is going to be important going forward to put together more of those type of performances that he had on Friday night.
Yeah, definitely. Well, after the break, we'll turn our attentions forward to the next preseason game coming up against the Raiders. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, coming up Thursday night at Lambeau Field, the Oakland Raiders visit. Preseason game number 2 was supposed to be number 3, but we'll call it preseason game number 2. What do you look for?
Giorgio Tavecchio.
That was a while ago, wasn't it?
I love Giorgio Tavecchio, though. He's one of my favorite guys ever. Backup kicker now for the Oakland Raiders. Got to give the kid credit. I think this is his fifth training camp. He's trying to still make a roster.
Wow.
Was a pleasure to cover back in 2013. We'll see him back at Lambeau Field. All kidding aside, it's going to be a really explosive offense. It's going to be fun to watch. I don't know how long we're going to see it from the Raiders, but as Dom Capers said, this is a great test for the Packers defense. There were some things that they were kind of concerned about, not concerned, but not happy about with the secondary and some of the deep balls that they gave up against the Browns. Now you got Amari Cooper coming into town. You have Derek Carr. Very explosive offense and a really formidable defense. I don't know how long we'll see those starters, but it's exciting to see what Reggie McKenzie's built out there.
Yeah, definitely. And on the Packers side, we may see Brett Hundley for the first time in the preseason. Right. He came back to practice this week after being out a couple weeks with that ankle injury. Looks no worse for wear. He seems to be looking sharp, at least early on in his return. And we talked a lot in the offseason about how Brett Hundley was going to have five preseason games to show his development. Well, it's down to three, and he hasn't been out there yet. You know, the one he was going to miss anyway, even without the cancellation in Canton. But this is Brett Hundley's time. He's been waiting. He mentioned in the locker room, he's been waiting for a year to get back on the field, you know, to get under center and play, to, you know, take snaps in games. And these are going to be some important games for him.
If everything goes according to plan, Brett Hundley's season's over in 3 weeks.
Right, exactly.
In terms of the on-field responsibilities. So you do want to get in that work. And as good as he was last season, we got to remember at the beginning of OTAs and at the beginning of camp, he wasn't sharp as a rookie. And you saw him grow so much over those four preseason games.
Yep.
And put together as good of a preseason as anybody in the National Football League. So, yeah, I think, you know, hearing him speak a little bit this week, I think he understands the urgency from that perspective. At the same time, they didn't want to put him in a situation where he ends up aggravating the ankle when, in reality, it's not that big of a deal. But when he's healthy, you know, when he's back to where he's feeling like he can do what he needs to do, this is a critical, and it's important for him to get that rhythm and timing down when he has those opportunities with those top of the depth chart receivers.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing I'll be looking for too, we talked about those guys, the young guys who got the sacks in the last segment, Christian Ringo, Kyler Fackrell, Reggie Gilbert. Now it's, can they do it again?
Yeah.
And not necessarily get another sack, but can they put a few more plays on film like that, that show that they belong, that show that they deserve a spot on the 53-man roster. Again, it's going to be a four-game body of work. Nobody wins a roster spot with just one or even two preseason games. But they showed a little bit of what they can do, and now it's a matter of repeating it and keeping up that level of play.
Jerone Elliott didn't have all five sacks as a rookie in one game. I think he might have came close. He might have had like three.
Yeah, I think he had three in one game.
But he had to do it, though, over a body of work. That's the key. Everybody can flash, except for if you and I were out there, we probably wouldn't do much. But,
no.
You know, the guys that are on this roster are there for a reason. They can show what they can do in spurts, but it's about the long-term consistency side of it. In exactly that, if you're Kyler Fackrell, if you're Christian Ringo, you want to double down now. You want to go out there and make that play once again. I don't know what the chances are of Reggie Gilbert running Derek Carr out of the end zone again. But if he can get another sack, it definitely shows you the growth, the maturity, and what he's looking to achieve in the long run.
Yeah, a lot of interesting roster battles, you know, in that bottom portion of the roster that are going to take a while to sort out. And this next game is just another piece of it, and then two road preseason games after that. So plenty more to talk about as the preseason continues. And we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And now that Alfalfa has his hair fixed underneath these headphones for the final segment, let's talk about the new touchback rule on kickoffs in the NFL. Touchbacks now on kickoffs, not on punts, but on kickoffs, will bring the ball out to the 25-yard line. This rule has been in place for a few years in the college ranks, and we haven't seen it change the game too much at the college level. But I'm wondering if it's going to change things at the NFL level. The league has been trying. They moved the kickoff spot up a couple of years ago. They're trying to reduce the number of kickoff returns because it's such a dangerous, you know, injury-prone play, particularly on the concussion side of things with high-speed collisions. But if the touchback is going to come out to the 25-yard line, are special teams coordinators and those special teams units, are they going to try to kick high and short, make them catch it on the 5-yard line and then try to tackle him inside the 25, which then is going to only lead to more returns and sort of backfire on the league's intent with trying to reduce the number of returns? What do you think?
Well, Weston Hockwitz, the unemployed special teams coordinator, would do exactly that. Because we hear so often the percentage, how it goes up exponentially the farther and farther you get away from the end zone. 20 to 25, man, that's a 5-yard gain. I mean, if they end up having been able to down it. So I think you are going to see that more. And think about it from the perspective of watching even that Friday night football game. There was, I think, one that kind of died right inside the 5-yard line there, yeah, almost where you want to get it. I think the Packers got it out to like the 15,
yeah,
maybe
something like that, between the 15 and the 20.
Yeah, so that's what
I just don't
for.
See. I just don't see teams conceding the 25-yard line. They're not just going to tell their kickers, okay, boom it to the back of the end zone and we'll give it to them on the 25. I think that the difference between the 20 and the 25 is significant. You're talking about, when you talk about NFL kickers who can make 50, 53, 54-yard field goals,
right,
that extra 5 yards of field position can easily be the difference between 3 points on a drive that maybe only gains 2 or 3 first downs.
Yeah, if anything, I wonder if it's going to change the mentality of some of those upper-level kickoff returners that sometimes will like to take it out from 7 or 8 yards deep.
Yeah.
In the end zone, are
yeah,
the coordinators now going to tell them, hey, it's just not worth it? We'll have to see. But in the instance that you're talking about, yeah, it really does make a lot of sense to me that if you have a kickoff returner, you're going to want to have them be able to get that ball out if you need to, and you're not going to want to give up those yards. So for kickoff specialists and special teams coordinators, I'm kind of perplexed. I don't know what their move is going to be, but for offenses, the closer you get to the end zone, the better. And if you feel like you have a kickoff returner that can do it, great. Otherwise, you're getting a free pass to the 25.
Yeah, and we may not necessarily hear what any of those strategies are until
right,
the regular season starts. I don't think anybody's necessarily going to give away their game plan with their special teams. So with that, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com on Twitter. He's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. At Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.